Did you know that in the last year alone, rates of anxiety and depression doubled in the United States? It can often take weeks to get a traditional therapy appointment, and these can be expensive. Well, Cerebral is an online mental health service that offers prescription medication, counseling and therapy for anxiety, depression, ADHD, insomnia and more. It's okay to not be okay. Cerebral is one of the few services out there to provide prescription medication online through a licensed provider, and they ship it right to your front door. You can message your care team on Cerebral at any point, and through the app, you essentially have them with you everywhere you go. You can schedule sessions with your counselor or therapist at any given time, and it's totally affordable. In fact, it's a third the price of traditional therapy, and there are options with or without insurance. Morbidology listeners get 65% off their first month of medication management and care counseling at getcerebral.com/morbidology. Click the link in my show notes or go to getcerebral.com/morbidology for 65% off your first month. That's just a total of $30 to get yourself started. Join Cerebral today on their mission to make quality mental health care accessible and affordable for all. With Best Fiends, the fun never ends. There's currently over 7,000 levels and countless cute characters to collect along the way. Best Fiends is a mobile puzzle game available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. It's bright and colourful and perfect for the long winter months, as well as a pick-me-up when I need a break during the busy holiday season. I'm currently on level 293, but there's new puzzles to solve each and every day. It's one of those games where 30 minutes really feels like 30 seconds. Best Fiends is super easy to follow and it's fun to play. It's a casual game that won't stress you out and it's very easy to pass the time with. Download Best Fiends for free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R. Best Fiends. Welcome to Morbidology. I'm your host, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Cults Uncovered, Mysteries Uncovered, and co-author of Unsolved Murders, True Crime Cases Uncovered. Join Morbidology on Patreon for exclusive episodes of Morbidology Plus, exclusive merch, ad-free and early release episodes, and much more. In 2017, police in Perry, Iowa, received an anonymous phone call reporting an unresponsive teenager inside a home. When they arrived at the scene, it quickly became apparent that this was far more complex than they first of all realized. And in fact, the teenage girl was the victim of prolonged abuse and neglect. It was the 12th of May 2017 when police in Perry, Iowa, received a phone call from a person informing them of an unresponsive teenager inside a home at 1708 First Avenue. It was the home of 40-year-old Misty Ray and her husband, 41-year-old Mark Ray. This couple ran a daycare out of their home called Rays of Sunshine Daycare. When the phone call was placed, Misty and Mark were not at the home. They were on vacation in Disney World. Upon entering the home, police came across the lifeless body of 16-year-old Sabrina Ray, the adoptive daughter of Misty and Mark. She wasn't unconscious. She was dead. She was wearing a pull-up diaper and a pink short-sleeved shirt. There was a thin mattress on the floor of the bedroom where Sabrina had died, and there were three potties in the closet. It was noted that the window was covered and there was a baby monitor-like camera in the room. Moreover, there was a magnetic-type alarm which had been installed on the door. Police had been called to the scene by Sabrina's cousin, Josie Boosman. The initial autopsy report would show that Sabrina was extremely malnourished. In fact, she weighed just 56 pounds, which was around half the weight of an average teenage girl. As one responding officer said, "What he saw in that home was the most horrific scene in my entire career and life." Perry Police Chief Eric Vaughan would provide a press conference.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming. My name is Chief Eric Vaughan from the Perry Police Department. With me is Mitch Morfett, the Assistant Director of the DCI. I'd just like to read a statement for you first, and then we'll be able to take a few questions. On May 12th at approximately 6:30 p.m., the Perry Police Department and Dallas County paramedics were called to 1708 First Avenue in Perry in reference to an unresponsive 16-year-old female. Upon officer's arrival, the female was found to be deceased. She was identified as Sabrina Ray, and she was the adopted daughter of Mark and Misty Ray. Her parents were not home at the time of her death, was discovered, but since have returned home. Three additional minor children have been removed from the home and are under supervision of the Iowa Department of Human Services. An autopsy was conducted on May 15th by the Iowa Office of the State Medical Examiner. Although final autopsy results are not expected for a few weeks, pending further laboratory testing, severe malnutrition was noted by the medical examiner. At the time of her death, Sabrina's weight was approximately 56 pounds.
The Iowa Department of Human Services would announce that the death was being investigated as a child abuse case, and both Misty and Mark were arrested on four counts of child endangerment, resulting in serious injury, three counts of neglect or abandonment of a dependent person, and one count of child endangerment resulting in death was filed against the couple. Iowa Department of Criminal Investigation and Assistant Director Mitch Morfett said that other charges could be filed against the couple depending on further autopsy reports. While Sabrina was noted during autopsy to be severely malnourished, further laboratory testing needed to be conducted. In addition to running the Rays of Sunshine daycare out of the family home, it also doubled up as a foster home. You can see a photograph of the daycare on the Vodacast app. Moreover, Sabrina wasn't the only child at the home. There were three other adoptive children, two girls and a boy, and none of the children were enrolled in school. They were allegedly homeschooled by the Rays. Following their arrest, the three other children were removed from the home. Four of the charges that Misty and Mark were facing were in relation to the two other adopted girls, indicating that they too had been abused and or neglected by the couple. In fact, almost as soon as they were arrested, it was revealed that the Ray home had been monitored by state workers after receiving complaints about inadequate nutrition, as well as the use of corporal punishment. Following Sabrina's death and the revelation that the family were known to DHS, a number of Iowa lawmakers would call for legislative oversight of Iowa's DHS. In fact, Representative Abby Finkenauer would call for DHS Director Chuck Palmer to immediately step down as director. Sabrina had been the second child under supervision from DHS to die over the past 2 years. Back in October, 16-year-old Natalie Flynn, who was also known to DHS, had been starved to death by her adoptive parents. DHS had been met with much criticism over the preceding months. Back in April, a Senate Oversight Committee investigation found that resources had been hard to come by due to the fact that full-time DHS employers had been declining. Between July of 2011 and July of 2016, 689 employees had left. DHS also had problems with rehoming, which meant that when a child is adopted, their parents hadn't realized that the child maybe needed an extra bit of care, and they had become unable to care for the child and simply handed the child off to somebody that they knew, somebody that hadn't been vetted by an adoption agency. That same year, DHS had privatized Iowa's Medicaid healthcare program for those who are poor and those who are disabled. Understandably, Many people, including healthcare advocates, completely lambasted the decision and argued that patients were being denied coverage and providers were facing problems with reimbursements. With the backlash against DHHS, Chuck Palmer would announce that he was retiring. In a statement, Governor Kim Reynolds would state, "Chuck has been a dedicated public servant who spent his life trying to improve the lives of Iowans." Jerry Foxhoven was announced as the new director of DHHS. DHHS would subsequently announce that they were going to be launching a full review of their process. They stated that the complaints had been in relation to the daycare that Misty and Mark ran, as opposed to the care of their own adopted children. Adoption and foster subsidies are a well-meaning law. However, far too often this is seen as an easy income for people who aren't fit to be parents. Time and time again we hear about children being abused and even being killed by their adoptive or foster parents, who have only adopted them for the income that comes with adopting or fostering a child. For example, according to the North American Council on Adoptable Children, those who adopt a hard-to-place child, such as a child with physical, mental, or emotional problems, as well as children over the age of 8, receive monthly payments up to $900, and that's just per child. Abusive people can often see this as nothing more than an easy income to benefit themselves as opposed to the child they are supposed to be caring for. Far too often, in instances such as this, these adoptive parents then use homeschooling as a method to isolate these unwanted and unloved children, and as a way to conceal the neglect and abuse that is going on back at home. You can learn more about this on the Vodacast app. Lawmakers weren't the only ones to be moved by Sabrina's death. It became a rallying cry throughout the community of Perry. Much of the community wished that there was something they could have done to save Sabrina, and they called for change. A couple of days after Sabrina's body was discovered, the community would come together for a somber candlelight vigil in her honour. They gathered at Perry's First Christian Church and spoke of the girl that none of them knew, but the girl who deserved so much better than what she was dealt. Daniel Beanshoff said to NBC News, "This girl deserved somebody to show that they did care for her. You hear about things like this and it bothers you." Meanwhile, in downtown Perry, the wall of a building became a makeshift prayer wall where people could write notes of condolences. It was hoped that the vigil and the prayer wall would bring awareness to the struggle of children who are being abused and neglected at home. A memorial would be held for Sabrina at the First Christian Church, and outside 16 balloons were released to symbolise Sabrina's 16 years on earth. Her murder had left many in disbelief, and that was a recurring theme throughout the memorial, with one person stating, "This was a tragedy that happened to a young girl no one really knew, but we are all impacted." While it was evident that Sabrina was clearly neglected and abused within the home, the extent still wasn't known, and the community were still really struggling to comprehend what had happened. Afterwards, the community would organise a candlelight vigil at Pathy Park for Sabrina. Jack Butler, who helped organise the event, said, "I thought, you know what, we need this." Those in attendance were handed either a Chinese lantern or a candle. A royal raindrop tree would be planted in Weiss Park in honour of Sabrina. Amanda Howard had organised the Trees for Sabrina event, alongside two other locals, Brian West and Heather Watson. Amanda's own children had previously attended the Rays of Sunshine daycare. She stated, "I feel guilty that I miss the signs of abuse, and I play it in my head. I want to honour Sabrina because she did not deserve what happened to her." In a cruel twist of fate, Sabrina had allegedly been neglected by her biological father and stepmother before she was adopted by Misty and Mark. Her father, Joseph Bush, and stepmother, Karina Bush, had been charged with child endangerment. They would allegedly tape Sabrina's door closed, claiming that they had done so to see if she was sneaking out at night. A few years after this incident, in which abuse was unfounded, somebody reported that Sabrina had unexplained redness around her mouth. When questioned, she said that her father and stepmother had put tape over her mouth to stop her from licking her lips. An affidavit alleged that her windows were nailed shut and the curtains were stapled so that she could not look out. Sabrina would then be removed from their care. This is something that Joseph has strongly denied. He said that the redness was caused by Sabrina licking her lips all of the time. He said, probably she was embarrassed. She was telling them what they wanted to hear. Probably any child would do the same. Sabrina was considered a special needs child, and shortly after she was removed from her father's care, Mark and Misty took her in as a foster child before adopting her in 2013. Misty and Mark would plead not guilty to the charges against them and would request that their $1 million cash bond be lowered in the hopes that they could be released from jail before they stood trial. The judge said that he would rule on that later. During the hearing, they would both waive the right to a speedy trial. Just a couple of days later, there was an unexpected twist in the case when three more people were arrested and charged in connection with Sabrina's death. Investigators working on the case revealed to the public that Sabrina had been left unable to walk, talk, or eat after she was drop-kicked down the basement stairs by her 21-year-old adoptive brother, Justin Dale Ray, weeks before her death. Justin was charged with two counts of willful injury and two counts of child endangerment. Justin was the biological son of Misty and Mark. Additionally, Sabrina's cousin, 20-year-old Josie Ray Boosman, was charged with abetting the abuse after she admitted to investigators that she helped injure Sabrina, helped keeping her confined, and denied her food and water. Sabrina's grandmother, 62-year-old Carla Boosman, was charged with aiding and abetting, kidnapping, child abuse resulting in death and obstruction after altering evidence at the crime scene, and providing false evidence. Misty and Mark were also additionally charged with three counts each of first-degree kidnapping. The additional charges indicated that this case was far more complex than first of all imagined, and that Sabrina had lived an absolutely horrendous life inside that home. It wasn't just Misty and Mark that abused her, but seemingly almost the entire family. According to investigators, Sabrina had suffered physical abuse at the home for an extended period of time. You can see photographs of Sabrina and the family on the Votacast app. After the new charges were filed, a joint oversight hearing into DHS relating to the death of Sabrina, as well as Natalie, who I mentioned earlier, was scheduled. This oversight committee would be looking into how DHS responds to abuse complaints, as well as the adoption process. While announcing this, Fern Armstrong, who was the DHS division administrator, broke down. He said, "This hits us. Our people care deeply." He was testifying about the toll the two deaths had taken on staff at DHS. Lawmakers had reduced funding for DHS in recent years, and they had cut staff by almost 15%. Firm would state that 80% of the recent reductions were due to institutional changes within DHS. For example, under the administration of former Governor Terry Branstad, DHS closed a centre for troubled teenagers in Toledo, as well as a mental health facility in Mount Pleasant, as well as Clarinda. 90% of the staff reductions were because of budget cuts. The main issue within DHS in Iowa were low staffing levels as well as high caseloads. There were also concerns over how foster parents are recruited and trained. Smartass and Sass offer the most unique and badass subscription boxes with the perfect balance of snark and charm. Each box comes with curated products that are bound to bring a smile to your face. From quirky doormats and cute decal stickers, there's something for everybody. Each box is curated and contains 5 to 7 items, including mugs, bags, cards, stationery, apparel, and more. Smartass and Sass is the perfect gift for that sassy and sarcastic woman in your life, or even for you as a treat. I've had 2 boxes so far. The first one came with the most lush perfume, a cheese cutting set, a cute hat perfect for Irish winters, a coin purse, and some more class items. The second one was right up my street. It contained a shampoo and body bar, a makeup bag, and a detox bubble bath. It was the perfect box for a writer who needs to relax after a long day of writing about crime. Morbidology listeners get 10% off a first-time subscription with the code MORBID. Just head on over to smartassandsass.com or click the link in my show notes and use the code MORBID for 10% off. There's nothing more exciting than a classic whodunit. Well, this week's episode is sponsored by the amazing game June's Journey. It's a free-to-download mobile game, and you've got to find objects hidden within beautiful and carefully crafted scenes. June's Journey is set in the 1920s, and there's a real glamorous feel to it. You play the game as an amateur detective who's investigating a number of mysteries. Each scene sees you involved in a murder mystery, and you get to meet some cool characters along the way. Characters that provide tips and leads. What I love especially about this game is that it's super relaxing and therapeutic, but at the same time, it truly tests your observations and keeps your mind fresh. It really puts your powers of observation to the test. I find myself playing this game late at night before I head to bed. Ready to awaken your inner detective? Well, download June's Journey free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Following the review, Sabrina's biological family were fighting to have her remains buried in DeSoto. Her aunt, Tonya Bush, said, "We've made all the calls and we keep getting told no, and we want to plead with the community. We are very grateful for the Perry community, but we are her biological family, and we want to put her in the family plot here in DeSoto." They needed Mark and Misty to waive their parental rights. These parental rights meant that Sabrina's burial was in their hands. Meanwhile, Justin, Josie and Carla would plead not guilty to the charges filed against them. Justin's defense attorney would file a motion for a pre-trial mental health evaluation to determine if he could effectively assist in his own defense and if he adequately appreciated the nature and circumstances of the charges. In July, the new DHS director, Jerry Foxhoven, would reveal his proposal to improve the foster care system in Iowa. His proposal included requiring foster parents receiving subsidies from the state to take their child to a doctor at least once a year. If those health professionals who saw the child suspected that they were being abused or neglected, then they would be compelled to report it. When Sabrina died, she weighed only 56 pounds. It would have taken her a while to get that emaciated, and if she had been taken to a doctor, then they could have flagged it. He announced that there were also going to be increased efforts to remove bureaucratic and troublesome duties so that caseworkers could focus more so on managing their cases. He also revealed that they had hired a consultant to make recommendations on ways they could improve the system, adding that this would be made public once complete. The following month, Sabrina's cause of death would finally be publicly released. According to the medical examiner who had performed her autopsy, she died of malnutrition due to denial of care. Her death was ruled a homicide. It would also be announced that Justin was competent and would stand trial on the charges. The trials for all family members were scheduled for the 30th of October. However, that date was then pushed back until 2018. The reason for the delay was in part because the prosecution needed to collect pre-adoptive and post-adoptive medical records for Sabrina, and these records were going to contain several thousand pages. Moreover, Sabrina's adoptive siblings were expected to testify, and they needed to be prepared, because they were all minors. With the prosecution and defense preparing for trial, more information regarding the case would be made public. As mentioned, it had been Josie who called police out to the home after Sabrina died. She had first of all called her grandmother, Carla, who came over and attempted to revive Sabrina, but to no avail. Josie and Carla then called Misty, who was on vacation, with Mark and other members of the family. After speaking with Misty, they finally called 911. However, before police arrived on the scene, they had removed a lock from the bedroom where Sabrina had died. After Misty was informed of Sabrina's death, she threw away the mobile phones of several members of the family. This indicated that the abuse of Sabrina was something that they had all probably spoken about via text message, or even documented via photographs. Misty and Mark's charges would be elevated, and they would be charged with first-degree murder. In the charges, the date of Sabrina's murder was listed as happening from January of 2012 to May the 12th, 2017. Mark was also charged with 2 counts of sexual abuse for allegedly abusing another child that was in their care. It was then announced that Josie would be testifying against the 4 other defendants in the upcoming trial. Then in February of 2018, Justin appeared in court, where he pleaded guilty to 2 counts of willful injury. In exchange for his guilty plea, prosecutors dropped the 2 counts of child endangerment against him. In court, he showed no semblance of emotion as he admitted to pushing Sabrina down a flight of stairs, kicking her in the head, cutting her chin, and breaking her jaw. He stated, "That person was my sister, Sabrina Ray. I did this by pushing my sister down a flight of stairs, and this caused bleeding to her head." He was sentenced to 10 years in prison. When announcing the sentence, Judge Terry Rickers said, "It is the cold and cruel and despicable nature of what you did to your sister. I must also consider the devastating effects of what your actions have done on your younger siblings." At the time of the attack on Sabrina, her 2 younger adoptive siblings were there. While they weren't there for the sentencing, one of the siblings had penned a letter for Justin, which read, "Dear Justin, you have destroyed my sister and I's life with your actions. You will be receiving a wake-up call Friday. It's breaking my heart. We did not deserve what you gave us. Nobody ever deserved that kind of treatment." After Justin was handed his sentence, Mark would request that the trial be moved out of Dallas County. The motion that was filed claimed that there was too much media coverage to receive a fair trial in Dallas County. Misty and Carla would follow suit, requesting a change of venue for the trial. However, shortly thereafter, Sabrina's grandmother, Carla, would change her plea and plead guilty to 1 count of neglect to a dependent person, 2 counts of false imprisonment, 1 count of accessory after the fact, 1 count of obstruction of prosecution, and 2 counts of child endangerment. Her defence lawyer, James Nelson, said, "Miss Boosman is accepting the responsibility today of pleading guilty to what she is responsible for doing, and we believe these charges, as amended, accurately outline the actions and omissions Mrs. Boosman is responsible for committing." In court, Carla admitted that she had assumed custodial care of Sabrina on the 12th of May 2017. She said that when she realised Sabrina was in distress, she did not bother to call for medical assistance. Carla told the courtroom that on the day Sabrina died, she had woken up, vomited, and then soiled herself. Instead of calling for help, Carla locked Sabrina in a room. In regards to false imprisonment, those charges related to Sabrina's adoptive siblings. They were identified in court only as HR and MR, and they had been locked in the room with Sabrina as she died. Carla admitted that before police arrived, she removed all of the locks from the doors and hid them in her car. Assistant County Attorney Stacey Ritchie would state, "Miss Boosman stood in the position of family to these girls. They called her grandma. She called herself grandma. Yet she knew the conditions in which these victims lived, and she chose to neglect their needs on that date, rather than seek medical intervention for Sabrina." Attorney Ritchie then read aloud a victim impact statement by one of the adoptive sisters of Sabrina. It read, "To Grandma Carla, I miss you. I love you still. I wish you would have told Misty and Mark to treat us better. I wish you would be nice to us instead of doing what Mark and Misty say. I wish you would have taken us out to do things. I wish you would have taken Sabrina to the doctor on the day she died instead of sitting there. I wish you would not have lied to the police and say that everything was all right. I wish you would have said that you hurt us and that Mark and Misty hurt us and that Justin hurt us. I wish you wouldn't have been mean to us. I wish we could have been like other families and had ice cream together." Carla then provided a statement herself, stating, "I wish I could go back to that day and change everything and do what I know was the proper thing to do. I can't change what is done now, but I am very sorry and I miss all of my grandchildren very much, and I hope for the best for MR and HR, and that they will forgive me for failing them when they needed me the most." Judge Rickers asked her, "How could you do that to your own grandchildren?" To which Carla replied, "I feel like I was manipulated into a situation that I wasn't completely aware of what was happening. I wish I had intervened a little sooner and called 911 a few hours earlier, but I can't change that fact. Carla was sentenced to 20 years in prison. In handing down the sentence, Judge Rickers said that there was no doubt in his mind that the maximum sentence was appropriate, adding, "Visiting a grandma is supposed to be a dream, but apparently in this case, contact between you and your grandchildren was nothing but a nightmare." Following Carla's sentencing, more charges were filed against Misty and Mark, including ongoing criminal conduct, theft, and fraudulent practice. It would be announced that their request to move trial was granted, and it was being moved to Sioux County. They would then file motions to have their murder charge thrown out, but the judge would deny the request. As they were preparing for trial, it was the one-year anniversary of Sabrina's murder. Her biological uncle, David Bush, said that they were still trying to get her ashes so that she could be buried alongside her biological grandparents. A candlelight vigil was held near the bench and tree that was planted in her memory. A number of people gathered and lit candles as they spoke of love, hope, and even forgiveness while they prayed for justice. Pastor Rick Gates of Crossroads Church said, "A candle represents light, and when light is introduced into darkness, it's no longer dark. When hope is introduced into hopelessness, it's no longer hopeless. When love is introduced into an atmosphere where there is no love, it's no longer loveless." On the 30th of September, Sabrina's biological family would hold a celebration of life service before laying her to rest. Her biological father, Joe Bush, would speak to KCAU.
"I'll rule the world and remember Sabrina as a fun, loving little girl that loved life. She was full of life."
After a long ordeal, her biological family had her cremated remains returned to them so that she could be buried alongside her biological grandparents. Joe stated that he never wanted to give Sabrina up and wished that he could have been there for her during her time in need.
"The one I really missed the most was, excuse me, seeing her when I came home from work. Sorry. She was giving me a hug, a kiss, and I miss that."
Joe said that the celebration of life for Sabrina had provided him some closure.
"Relief. A little bit of a closure for me, a closure for my family and friends. So now I know she's going to be put with God and up in heaven with her mom and her other family."
In December, it was announced that Ray had reached a plea agreement. He pleaded guilty to one charge of child endangerment causing death and three charges of third-degree kidnapping. In court, he stated, "I failed to obtain necessary medical care to treat this physical disability, and my failure to obtain medical care caused Sabrina's death." He also admitted that he locked Sabrina and two of her adoptive siblings in the home, covering the windows and restricting their movements in the house. Judge Ricker stated, "You, as her parent, were responsible and should have been responsible for getting her medical care, ultimately preventing her from dying." Is there something interfering with your happiness, or are you apprehensive about reaching out for help? BetterHelp is here to help you, and they're today's sponsor of Morbidology. BetterHelp is not self-help, it's professional counseling available to you online or over the phone. BetterHelp is more affordable and accessible than traditional offline counseling, and they offer financial aid. Sadly, sometimes traditional offline counseling is not locally available for everybody, but BetterHelp is available for clients worldwide. They have licensed professional counselors specializing in a broad variety of areas, including depression, sleeping, self-esteem, grief, and much more. Everything you share with your counselor is confidential and they are matched to your specific needs. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/morbidology. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp.com/morbidology. following month, Misty also pleaded guilty to one count of first-degree kidnapping and two counts of third-degree kidnapping, which were three felonies. In court, she read from a prepared statement.
I intentionally acted to secretly and unreasonably confine Sabrina Ray without her consent and having no authority to do so. I caused such confinement by way of covering the bedroom windows from the outside view, by placing a lock on the door, and by causing the door to be locked while she was so confined. During and as a result of that confinement, on May 12, 2017, Sabrina Ray died of malnutrition, which is a serious injury.
Misty and Mark were to be sentenced together. During the sentencing phase, the foster parent of Sabrina's two adoptive siblings would read aloud a victim impact statement. It read, "You have caused me so much trauma that I have flashbacks and nightmares. It has affected me so much that I have wanted to kill myself so many times. I have cut myself. I have run away. I have tried to tie shoestrings around my neck. You did not have to do these things to us. You could have left. You did not have to listen to her." It was evident that this final comment was directed at Mark, indicating that Misty was the driving force behind the abuse. Another victim impact statement from the other adoptive daughter would reveal that she had been starved to the point that she threw up blood. The two girls were said to be thriving outside of the Ray home. Part of the victim impact statement from them read, "I am healing from it. When I have nightmares, I know that you're in jail and that you can't get to me. I am taking my power back." Before handing down the sentence, Judge Ricker said, "Mr. Ray and Mrs. Ray, your actions and treatment of your daughters in this case could be fairly described as both cruel and evil. Sabrina's sisters were forced to watch her slowly and agonizingly die."
Sabrina lies there, malnourished, emaciated, diaper clad, covered in various wounds and bruises. Her ashen skin barely covers her skeleton.
He held up a photograph of Sabrina smiling, stating that it was a refreshing portrait of her humanity, as opposed to the inhumanity in seeing her hollow and lifeless eyes staring into darkness.
"This Sabrina, a girl with a broad smile and a sparkle in her eye."
The court would hear that Misty and Mark fed the girls nothing but oatmeal, bread and stuffing, and that they would physically abuse them, beating them and even body slamming them. All three girls had been forced to sleep on bare, cold floors and were confined to a room with windows that had been covered, making it impossible for them to escape or even attempt to call for help to somebody outside. Misty would be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, while Mark was sentenced to 80 years in prison. He was ordered to serve at least 35 years before being considered for parole. In court, Misty would apologize for the first time and state, "There are no words that can express how incredibly sad I am for the hurt that I have caused our children and my poor decisions. I would give anything to go back in time and right all those wrongs.
It was my responsibility to protect and love our children and not cause them pain. I failed as their mother. All this is my fault. And I want our children to know that they did nothing wrong, that they are good kids who deserve better. I'm so sorry."
After they were sentenced, Josie, who is the final defendant, also reached a plea agreement. She pleaded guilty to neglect and two counts of child endangerment. In court, she said, "On May 12, 2017, I locked her in a room alone and unattended. Judge Rickers asked if she took any action to provide Sabrina with the attention or care she needed to prevent her death. She responded, I did not." Sabrina's sisters provided victim impact statements once again.
"On behalf of the child I'm harmed, dear Josie, you were supposed to be my cousin. You were supposed to love me. You treated me so badly. You would smack me. I wish you were a nice cousin to me. My new cousins now play makeup with me and play dress up. We go on vacation. We have a lot of fun together. We love each other and make good memories together. I wish I could have done that kind of stuff with you. You could have told somebody about what was happening to me and my sister. You could have saved my sister Sabrina the day she died. It could have ended up different. I don't have anything to say to you. What you did to me hurt me so bad. Now I get new clothes, and I am treated right by my new mom and family. I am way better off without you ever in my life again. On behalf of the child HR, dear Josie, you had every opportunity to call the cops so that my sister wouldn't have died. You did not do as much as they did, but you still played a role in it. Thank you, though, for defending us and helping us to get them put in prison for the rest of their lives. I really wish you could have gotten us out of there sooner. When you get out, I want there to be a no contact order. I think this will help me to get free.
Josie was sentenced to 14 years in prison. While this story should have ended there, it didn't. In 2019, the Ray family were back in the media once again when Sabrina's grandmother, Carla, escaped from prison. She was arrested shortly thereafter, around a mile away from the prison, and was charged with escape, which is a Class D felony. Just the following year, the Iowa State Ombudsman would release their findings into the death of Sabrina, and they found that she could have been saved if DHS social workers had have been more thorough when they investigated the family. It revealed that DHS had received 11 child abuse reports against Misty and Mark between 2010 and 2015, relating to Sabrina and her siblings, children that they had fostered, and children who attended their daycare. While it was first reported in the media that these reports related to the daycare, as opposed to the care of the couple's adopted children, this clearly wasn't the case. Some of these reports included comments that Sabrina looked extremely thin and unhealthy. Other reports had accused Misty and Mark of forcing their children to drink soapy water, stand over freezing cold vents, and eat their own vomit. Others alleged they beat and belittled the children in the home, as well as locked them in closets as a form of punishment. There was also a report that they had called one of their foster children a fat ass and showed him photographs of his biological parents on the internet, referring to them as meth Facebook pages. When authorities came out to the home, they found locks, alarms, and coverings on the doors and windows where Sabrina had died. There was a paper-thin mattress where she was forced to use a potty in the room where she was confined to. According to the report, a DHS inspector failed to look in the room just months before Sabrina died because she had misunderstood DHS policy, which required a complete examination of the home. There were other DHS workers that had come into the home and noted in their assessments that Sabrina looked unnaturally thin, but they did not have the proper training to recognise malnutrition. Following Sabrina's death, the report found that the family nickname for Sabrina was Fucktard, and also that Mark had sexually abused one of her sisters. There were occasions where Sabrina and her sisters were not fed for 3 or 4 days at a time, and that they were not given water. They resorted to stealing food from the trash can and then hiding it in their diapers. It was when Mark was searching for food in their diapers that he would sexually abuse one of the girls. When they were examined following Sabrina's death, they too were found to be severely malnourished. There was also evidence that Justin had sexually abused one of them. The ombudsman wrote, "There were plenty of official eyes and ears on this family. When it came down to it, there was not sufficient communication among DHS officials." Following the release of the report, DHS stated, "We are committed to learning from these tragedies so we can improve the safety net DHS provides for Iowa's children."
We'll just continue on. I mean, life's got to go on. I mean, you can't bring her back, you know, and you just keep having her memory in your heart.
Sabrina Ray had lived a short and tragic life. After being removed from her biological father's care, she entered a home which became a house of horrors, not only for her, but for her adoptive siblings as well. In 2017, child abuse findings in Iowa rose 26% from 8,892 in 2016 to 11,236 in 2017, with over 2,000 parents having their rights terminated. In the wake of Sabrina's murder, sweeping changes were made to the child protection system in Iowa, in the hopes that no other child ever has to suffer like Sabrina did. Well, Bessies, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'd like to say a big massive thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporters, V-Guard, Cora, and A. Baker. If you'd like to support the show, please feel free to check Morbidology out on Patreon. The link is in the show notes, or you can just search on the app or website. In exchange for your support, I send out handwritten thank you notes, as well as merch. I also upload ad-free and early release episodes, and bonus episodes of Morbidology Plus that aren't on the regular platforms. There's also bonus content up on there, including audio and case files. Morbidology also has a private Facebook group that I'd love for you all to join. I'd love to chat with my listeners about the episodes, their thoughts on the episodes, as well as chat about potential cases you'd like to hear on the show. Just search for Morbidology on Facebook and it should come up. Can I also ask a huge favour and ask that if you enjoy Morbidology, please consider leaving me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening. Ratings and reviews are an easy way to support a show that you like, and I'd love to hear your feedback. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, I hope you all have an amazing holiday period with your loved ones. Take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
My name is John Lorden, and I've been looking into hundreds of unsolved mysteries over the past 5 years on my YouTube channel, Lorden Arts. And I've been known to bring a respectful, victim-focused approach to the stories that I cover while donating thousands of dollars directly to those cases and the charities that help them. Now, I'm bringing that approach and sensibility, along with some of the biggest mysteries I've ever looked into and some new ones, to a weekly podcast called Seriously Mysterious. From bizarre occurrences to unsolved murders and unexplainable disappearances, everything is fair game on this show as long as it's seriously mysterious. You can find Seriously Mysterious on your favorite podcatchers or by visiting seriouslymysterious.com. Let's look into the mysterious together.